Haider, the last time we talked, Casgevy had just been approved. Now we have 3 years of follow-up data. Are these patients actually cured? That's a word we use very carefully in medicine. But I'll tell you, when you have patients who are having 3 to 10 vaso-occlusive crises per year, who were in and out of the hospital constantly, who needed transfusions regularly, and now 3 years after a single treatment they have zero crises, zero hospitalizations, zero transfusions, I think cure is a reasonable word to use.
Welcome to TechNova. I'm Dr. Sarah Chen.
And I'm Dr. James Park. Today we're joined by Dr. Haider Frangl, principal investigator at Sarah Cannon Research Institute and one of the lead investigators on the Casgevy trials. Haider, welcome back to the show. Thanks for having me. It's great to be back.
Haider, for listeners who aren't familiar, can you explain what Casgevy is and how it works?
Sure. Casgevy is a gene therapy for sickle cell disease and beta thalassemia, two inherited blood disorders caused by mutations in the beta globin gene. The therapy uses CRISPR-Cas9 gene editing to modify a patient's own hematopoietic stem cells, the cells in the bone marrow that produce blood cells. Specifically, we edit the BCL11A gene, which normally suppresses the production of fetal hemoglobin. By disrupting BCL11A, we reactivate fetal hemoglobin production, which doesn't have the sickling mutation and can carry oxygen effectively. So you're not fixing the sickle cell mutation directly, you're turning on a different type of hemoglobin that compensates for it? Exactly. It's an elegant approach. Instead of trying to fix the specific mutation, which is different in different patients, we bypass it entirely by switching on fetal hemoglobin, which we all produce before birth. Fetal hemoglobin has higher oxygen affinity and doesn't sickle. So even though the adult hemoglobin is still defective, the fetal hemoglobin compensates.
Walk us through the treatment process for a patient.
It's a multi-step process. First, we collect the patient's stem cells through a process called apheresis, similar to dialysis, where we filter stem cells from the blood. Then those cells are sent to a manufacturing facility, where they're edited using CRISPR-Cas9. The edited cells are frozen and shipped back to the treatment center. Meanwhile, the patient undergoes conditioning, chemotherapy to make room in their bone marrow for the new cells. Then we infuse the edited cells back into the patient, and they ingraft, they settle into the bone marrow and start producing blood cells with fetal hemoglobin. The whole process takes about 2 to 3 months from collection to infusion, plus several weeks of recovery. And this is a one-time treatment? The patient doesn't need to come back for repeat doses? Correct. It's a one-time treatment. The edited stem cells persist in the bone marrow and continue producing blood cells with fetal hemoglobin indefinitely. That's what the 3-year data confirms. The editing is stable, the fetal hemoglobin production is sustained, and the clinical benefit is durable.
Let's dig into the 3-year data. What are the specific results?
We now have follow-up data on 44 patients in the sickle cell cohort and 27 in the beta thalassemia cohort, with follow-up ranging from 12 to 36 months. The key findings. In the sickle cell group, 96.6% of patients remained free of vaso-occlusive crises, the painful episodes caused by sickled cells blocking blood vessels, for at least 12 consecutive months after treatment. In the beta thalassemia group, 91.4% achieved transfusion independence, meaning they no longer needed regular blood transfusions to survive. And these benefits have been maintained at the 3-year mark. Fetal hemoglobin levels have remained stable, averaging about 40% of total hemoglobin, which is well above the threshold needed for clinical benefit. And what about safety? Any adverse events emerging over time? The safety profile has been consistent with what we saw in the earlier data. The main adverse events are related to the conditioning chemotherapy, nausea, mucositis, low blood counts during the engraftment period. Those are expected and manageable. We have not seen any off-target editing effects, meaning the CRISPR didn't cut the genome in unexpected places, and we've been monitoring for that very carefully. No malignancies, no clonal expansion that would suggest a cancer risk. The long-term safety looks good, but we'll continue monitoring for years because this is a new class of therapy and we need to be thorough.
Are there any patients who didn't respond to the treatment?
A small number. In the sickle cell cohort, one patient did not achieve the primary endpoint of being crisis-free for 12 months. That patient had a lower engraftment of edited cells. We're not entirely sure why, but it could be related to the conditioning regimen or to individual patient biology. We're studying those non-responders to understand what factors predict success, so we can optimize the treatment for everyone. Hyder, Casgevy costs about $2.2 million per patient. That's an enormous price tag. How do you think about access and affordability? It's a critical question, and I don't want to downplay it. The cost is high because this is a complex, personalized manufacturing process. Each patient's cells are edited individually. But I think you have to weigh it against the lifetime cost of sickle cell disease. A patient with severe sickle cell disease might cost the healthcare system $4 to $8 million over their lifetime, between hospitalizations, transfusions, emergency visits, and management of complications like stroke and organ damage. So from a health economics perspective, a one-time cure at $2.2 million can actually be cost-saving over the long run.
What about the global burden? Sickle cell disease disproportionately affects people in sub-Saharan Africa, where healthcare systems are very different. Is there a path to making this accessible globally?
This is something I'm very passionate about. The vast majority of sickle cell patients are in Africa and India, not in the US and Europe. The current treatment process, with its sophisticated manufacturing, conditioning chemotherapy, and weeks of hospitalization, is not easily deployable in low-resource settings. But there are efforts underway. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has funded research into simplified CRISPR delivery methods that could work in those settings. There's also work on in vivo gene editing, where you deliver the CRISPR machinery directly to the patient's body, rather than extracting cells, editing them in a lab, and infusing them back. That would eliminate the need for the complex manufacturing process. It's probably 5 to 10 years away, but it could be transformative for global access. What about scaling within the US? How many patients can actually be treated per year? The bottleneck right now is not the science, it's the infrastructure. You need specialized treatment centers with expertise in stem cell transplantation, you need apheresis capacity, you need clean room facilities for cell processing, and you need trained staff. Right now, there are maybe 30 to 50 centers in the US that can do this. We need to expand that. I think we'll see significant capacity growth over the next 3 to 5 years as more centers come online and as the manufacturing process becomes more streamlined.
Beyond sickle cell and beta thalassemia, what's next for CRISPR therapeutics?
There are CRISPR therapies in clinical trials for a range of conditions: Duchenne muscular dystrophy, inherited blindness, certain cancers, HIV. The sickle cell success has validated the platform. It proved that CRISPR gene editing can be safe, effective, and durable in humans. That gives confidence to regulators, investors, and patients. I think we'll see approvals for additional CRISPR therapies within the next 2 to 3 years. The field is moving from proof of concept to a genuine therapeutic modality. Hyder, before we wrap, is there a moment from the trial that stands out to you personally? There are many, but one that I think about often. A young woman in the trial who had been hospitalized for sickle cell crises every few months since childhood. About 6 months after treatment, she came in for a follow-up visit, and she told me she had started college, something she had never thought possible because she was always too sick. She was living her life. That's what this is about. Not the science, not the publications, it's about patients getting their lives back.
That's incredibly powerful. Dr. Hyder Frangl, thank you so much for joining us and for your pioneering work.
Thank you both. It's been a pleasure. And thanks to all of you for listening. This is Technova. See you next time.